Good day and welcome to the TGS Q2 2013 results webcast presentation. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Robert Hobbs, CEO of TGS. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Deirdre. Hello, my name is Robert Hobbs. I'm CEO of TGS, and welcome to TGS's second quarter 2013 conference call. Joining me today on the call is Christian Johansson. He's our CFO. Earlier today, we posted our second quarter earnings release and held a presentation of those results. A replay of that presentation is available on our website, and I hope that you've had an opportunity to view this. And we'll just give a brief summary of the main points from that presentation before opening this call to your questions. In the second quarter of 2013, TGS had total net revenues of $210 million, a small decrease of 2% compared to the same period of 1 year ago. Once again, sales from our high-quality data library have been very strong, with second quarter late sales of $155 million, up 43% from Q2 of 2012. This is the second highest quarterly late sales in the company's history. Net pre-funding revenues of $43 million were down 57% from Q2 2012, funding 39% of the company's operational multi-client investments during Q2. Our pre-funding rate for the first half of 2013 is below our original plan, and this has contributed to a revision of our annual guidance. Multi-client investment totaled $110 million in the quarter, down 32% from Q2 of 2012. I'll just remind you that we did revise that annual guidance on July 8th of last month, so we are not changing guidance in this call from what was guided on July 8th. Proprietary revenues of $12 million were down from the previous quarter as we completed acquisition of our Columbia survey in April. However, they were still up from the $6 million recognized in the same period last year. Our resulting operating profit was $98 million, up from $94 million 1 year ago, and represents 47% of net revenues. Tax flow was impacted by the resolution from the Norwegian tax authorities that was received in May of 2013, which resulted in an acceleration of tax payments during this quarter. Tax flow from operations was $34 million, down from $144 million in Q2 2012. Nonetheless, even after payment of our dividend in June, our closing cash position was a healthy $172 million. Earnings per share were 66 cents per share, compared to 63 cents per share in Q2 of 2012. TGS had 5 3D vessels and 2 2D vessels operating under its control in Q2. We were also a participant in 2 2D marine JV projects and 1 EM or electromagnetic survey joint venture with EMGS. The Central Gulf of Mexico continued to be an important area of activity for TGS, with ongoing acquisition of the Amerigo 3D survey and the announcement of the Francisco 3D survey. TGS further built its dominant position in the Barents Sea with 2 3D seismic projects and an EM survey taking place during the quarter and into Q3. The strength of TGS's broadband clarified technology is proving very important in this region. We also commenced a 2D project offshore Denmark, our first project here for 14 years, and that project was acquired in anticipation of a license round later in 2013. TGS continued its projects in Angola, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, with the first two being completed in the quarter and Sierra Leone soon thereafter. TGS also announced a 3-year agreement with BGP to jointly acquire and process seismic data offshore Madagascar in East Africa. The first project under this agreement was completed in Madagascar ahead of the license round, which industry expects to be announced later this year. We have today announced new projects in eastern Canada and the UK west of Shetlands and see a healthy pipeline of opportunities going forward. We continue to be comfortable that there is adequate available vessel capacity to execute on our investment budget. As already mentioned, lower pre-funding versus our plan and a review of the investment plans for the remainder of the year have resulted in a revision of our previous annual guidance. We should, however, highlight that expected returns on our investment for new projects remain unchanged. TGS now guides multi-client investments of $520 to $590 million, average pre-funding in the range of 40 to 50% of investments, average annualized multi-client amortization rate in the range of 40 to 46% of net revenues, and net revenues in the range of $920 million to $1 billion, of which approximately 5% will be from proprietary contract projects. At this time, we'll open the call to your questions. I'll turn the call over to you, Deirdre, to give instructions on Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everybody to signal. Our first question comes from Christopher Muller-Luckin of SB1 Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You were quoted in the local media earlier today regarding that you targeted 1 to 2 M&A opportunities in second half this year. Could you describe a bit what are your typical M&A targets for PGS part? Historically, it seems like first priority has been multi-client assets and secondly, processing companies.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Christopher. I think the I think I may have been slightly misquoted in the article. I think what I was explaining to the interviewer was that historically, if you look at TGS in the past, on average, we've done about 1 to 2 M&A transactions, on average a year. And these have been small M&A transactions typically. I guess the largest M&A transactions that we've done have been about $70 million, $72 million was for Arcus last year. So just as an example, let's take 2012. We did a small acquisition of a technology company earlier in the year for $4 million. Then, of course, we did the Arcus acquisition in June of last year, and that was $72 million. I don't expect going forward that we would necessarily see a change in trend from how we historically deal with M&A. I think we'll continue to look for opportunities to pick up companies that have interesting technologies that we could leverage to add value to our data library business. I think that's probably first priority. We're always looking for opportunities to pick up other data library assets as well, but those opportunities have to be measured against our own opportunities because it's probably better to invest in our own original geophysical projects so that we can recognize the full sales cycle to reach our expected rate of return. It sometimes gets difficult buying somebody else's data library because it's been for sale for a while. So you have to somehow convince yourself that you're going to be able to receive or to obtain a rate of return from those acquired assets similar to what you would achieve on a virgin project, and that usually gets kind of hard to do. But there are some cases where we've done it in the past. But I don't see a change really, unless you can never say never. We do something bigger than what we've done in the past, but I don't necessarily. There's nothing that would lead me to say that there'd be necessarily a change in what we've done historically of 1 to 2 on average of M&A transactions a year, and there may be occasional years where we don't do any. It just depends on what opportunities are out there and present themselves to us.
Some years ago, you tried actually to merge with Wavefield, partly driven by the fact that Gulf of Mexico was opening up for wide azimuth, which at the beginning it was hard for TGS to get access to the high capacity vessels you needed to acquire wide azimuth. Would that ever be relevant again, or do you see that you do get the capacity you need being an asset light owner?
Yeah, certainly in the market we're in right now, we're not having a problem finding the capacity we need. I think the example that you cited, I think was a very unique case where there was a new technology that required a coordinated fleet of vessels that, you rightly state, had to be modern and very coordinated, and so I do think that that was a unique case. I don't see that, you know, certainly in the near to medium term, I don't see a transaction like that on our horizon. I think we're very happy with the sort of the position we're in right now, and certainly in the market we're in right now, we're not having trouble getting access to 3D or 2D vessels.
In the second quarter results, we could see very high margins in the North and South America business, probably driven by high amount of sales from service being fully written down. Late March, Anadarko announced a big oil discovery on Shenandoah. Did you see any impact on the Q2 sales in Gulf of Mexico driven by the, I would say, series of discoveries being announced in this region in Q2?
You know, one of the best things that can happen to a multi-client company is to have exploration success near our data. And so we're always happy to see that. Shenandoah was in the Walker Ridge area of the Gulf of Mexico. We do have some 3D assets there, but they're a bit older, narrow azimuth 3D assets. There have been other discoveries in the Gulf of Mexico that have probably been more impactful to our activities in the Shenandoah. But, I can't really talk specifics. I would just say that we're always happy to see exploration success where we have data library.
In the onshore business, although you don't split onshore and marine multi-client investments, is it fair to assume that you'll follow the typical trend we see for other onshore seismic companies with the major investments happening in Q4, Q1, and then a seasonal low in Q2 due to spring breakup?
Yeah, I think, that pattern I think you'll certainly see in our Canadian operations. In the onshore U.S., where we've invested in three projects and have just announced a new one, operations there can occur year-round. There's not really necessarily a seasonal factor in that region, but certainly in Canada, our onshore activity will be, it will likely be always focused more towards the Q4, Q1 sort of season, the Canadian winter season, where you have the icing and you don't have the agricultural activity that you would have in the summertime.
And finally, on Brazil, there are several seismic commitments related to acreage that were awarded in northern Brazil, and there's discussions if those commitments should be part of larger multi-client programs. Is that something that you actively are considering, given that you've done similar things offshore Angola, for example?
It's certainly an interesting area for us, and we haven't announced any projects in that region, but we are aware of a number of companies that have picked up acreage there that are looking for 3D data. Obviously I can't talk about any specifics, but I would just say that is an interesting area for us.
Our next question comes from Caroline Hickson of UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I just had a question on the onshore U.S. survey you're doing in the second half of the year. Can you give us any indication of the pre-funding levels there? Are they higher or lower than your typical marine investments?
Yeah, I think we've communicated, we traditionally communicate in our onshore surveys that, they tend to be, I guess you can characterize those as more highly pre-funded. If you're to compare those to our marine, let's talk a little bit about marine pre-funding. If we're acquiring a marine 3D in a mature area where there is, often license rounds, regular license rounds, good acreage turnover, many clients, we're typically more willing to acquire a survey or start a survey with lower pre-funding in an area like that versus if we're to acquire a 3D in a frontier area where, the late sales opportunities and the timing of those late sales are less visible. I would you might, and that's to say you might be willing to start a project in an area like the Gulf of Mexico for, 30% or 40% pre-funding, but, in a area like West Africa, you may want to wait until you have a, more than 100% pre-funding. Yeah, I would characterize our onshore investments as being closer to the higher end of that range, we never really talk about specifics on pre-funding on our projects, but the reason why, a way to think about it is in the onshore U.S. there aren't those regular license rounds that are held by the government. It's all the mineral rights and the surface rights are held by private acreage, private landowners. So you don't have a license round structure that encourages acreage turnover like you do, say, in the Gulf of Mexico. So we would typically, and we typically, before we invest in an onshore U.S. project, we typically look for higher pre-funding. And that's, funding's more similar to what we would do on a marine frontier project, I guess.
Okay, thanks. And I don't know if it's too early to give this sort of guidance, but going forward, I mean, obviously we've had the pre-funding rate down this year, and you said that's specific to the Barents, but we are also seeing increased competition in the multi-client business. In sort of going forward, should we expect it to revert back up to a more normal kind of 55%, or will it sort of trend down on competition?
Pre-funding on a quarter-by-quarter basis just purely depends upon the product mix. A lot of it depends on when for example, I just described to you kind of a range of pre-funding when I talked about the marine projects. If you're investing more in some of these mature areas in contrast to the frontier areas in a particular quarter, your pre-funding is going to be lower that particular quarter. I don't see the pre-funding picture in general hasn't necessarily really changed in the marketplace. There are always going to be the quarters where you have pre-funding that is lower because a particular region you've started projects and those investments in that region because of the timing of the start of those projects or the maturity of the basin is lower pre-funding, and that'll on that particular quarter will drive the pre-funding lower. But if you look historically at our pre-funding, while you're right, our average is around 54%, mid-50s. There's quite a bit of variability on a quarter-by-quarter basis. There have been some quarters that we've reported as high as, 70-80% pre-funding. And several quarters, where we've reported into the lower 40s and 30s, like we have this quarter. So it really depends upon project mix.
Okay, thanks. And just finally, obviously you haven't booked in any more 3D vessels for this year, but you seem fairly confident of playing the spot market in the fourth quarter. What makes you so confident on that?
Our conversations with our vessel suppliers. We are in regular conversations, and we're talking to them now about vessel availability on investments that we're working on that would occur in the fourth quarter. So as you talk to companies like that, you get a real sense of the market and what availability might be out there. And as we talk to vessel providers about projects, we're getting good and multiple proposals for projects.
Okay, thanks. That's all from me.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Carly.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll take our next question from John Olazen of ABG. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. A question on the North American business. WTI has risen significantly lately, as well as the natural gas price in the U.S. Has this influenced your business at all? Have you noticed any change?
I haven't. We haven't really noticed a response from our customers based upon the recent oil price changes. To be honest with you, John, I mean there hasn't been a clear reaction from our customers to it now.
Mm. Okay, and in the beginning of the year, you said that U.S. onshore investments in 2013 are likely to be on par with the level in 2012. Is that something you can reconfirm now? And if so, why don't they grow quicker? Because the U.S. production is going through the roof, and the activity in the U.S. onshore seems to be very, very high. And given the rise in the WTI and the natural gas prices, it looks set to be that trend looks set to continue.
Yeah, you know, I can't really guide on our onshore investments by themselves, because we just don't provide that granularity. You know, we report all that as part of our North and South America business. I will say, though, that we're seeing good customer feedback on our ideas there, which is encouraging. I think I would say that the activity still remains focused on the liquids plays. I haven't seen necessarily signals that there is a big shift back to seismic activity maybe in the gas plays yet. But not to say that there won't be some reaction, but I think there's the interest still continues to be on the onshore liquids unconventional plays, you know, the plays that's really what people are focused on now, and we're getting good feedback from our customers, which is encouraging.
How about outside of the U.S.? Are you looking at multi-client investments? Investment opportunities onshore in other regions?
You know, you can never say never, but it's difficult to put together onshore and multi-client outside of the U.S., and the reasons for that it's a lot on a unit basis. The cost of acquiring a 3D seismic survey onshore is a lot higher than offshore. And for the multi-client business, you know, the objective is to share that cost amongst a number of companies that makes it compelling for them to join into the project. The problem in most onshore plays outside of the U.S. or the concession blocks are very, very tend to be pretty large. And the surveys, you know, because of the cost and the involvement of the surveys, it's not cost-effective to cover an entire onshore block. So that's kind of a long answer to say there's not a lot of areas that we've seen outside of the U.S. where you can really make onshore multi-client work, in our opinion. It's not to say that, you know, we don't look at ideas and something might pop up in the future, but it's really difficult. In the onshore U.S., you know, you have tens of customers that might have interest in one of these onshore surveys, and that's ideal for the multi-client business.
And then a question on the pre-funding competition in the Barents Sea. I would think that the oil companies are more interested in certain areas in the Barents Sea than others, and therefore there should be high pre-funding for some surveys and no pre-funding for other surveys. But it seems to be the case that everybody is experiencing low pre-funding for everything in the Barents Sea. Is there any particular reason for that, and why don't we see big differences in pre-funding levels from survey to survey in the Barents Sea, and company to company, for that matter?
Yeah, you know, I can't speak for the other guys, right? So that would be a question you'd have to ask really kind of each company, that because it's a question that's, as you pointed out, kind of unique to the project. You know, I could talk to where we've been acquiring data, and we've continued to work in core areas that we've identified and built on for previous years. So we have a lot of geologic knowledge and a lot of confidence and a lot of customer discussions, you know, from our past acquisition on where we should be with our new investments. And we continue to work in those core areas like the Hoop Complex and Finnmark platform of the Barents. I think that as we described in our conference earlier this morning, you know, I think what was key this year was to get started early, and that's exactly what we did. You know, we secured the capacity we needed for the Barents Sea season. We secured that capacity late last year, so we had the vessels already scheduled. We were able to take early delivery of those vessels. The weather was good, and we were able to get up there quick and get started quick. Just for those competitive reasons that you cited. We wanted to make sure that nobody else slid in there and started acquiring data before we got into those areas that we think are the best areas of the Barents, which is where we're acquiring data. So, you know, the lower, and as you know, John, you know, the once we start a project, we can't recognize any additional pre-funding on that project. So you can imagine we started these projects in late Q1, earliest Q2. You know, we cut the pre-funding time off at that point, and it was and that was because we wanted to get an early start. Because we thought we were in the best areas. We didn't want somebody to slide in there and get on top of us.
How's the interest been in those particular surveys now that you have started collecting the data?
Very good. Yeah, we've had we've had good interest in those areas. Again, we feel like we're in the hot spots of the Barrens.
Well, thanks a lot. Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
We'll now take a follow-up question from Christopher Mullerlocken of SB1 Markets. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Yeah, just two follow-ups, actually. First of all, the Cheyenne project you'll be starting onshore U.S., will that be in the high or the low end of investment guidance for onshore? Or mid-range?
Well, Christopher, this is Christian. What we have been communicating to the market historically is that whether it's going to be in the upper part of the range or the lower part of the range really depends on a few factors, and mainly on the terrain and the infrastructure of the region. And I would say that Colorado has a good infrastructure and a relatively easy terrain to do seismic acquisition. So I think that gives you at least some guidance of where we should be in the range.
Also keep
in mind that for Q4 we will consider running two crews at the same time, which basically means that this survey will be almost the same investment size as if we did two separate surveys.
And secondly, earlier this morning you said Gulf of Mexico needs, or the oil companies in the Gulf of Mexico needs to see new technologies in the seismic space. CGG also reported today, talking about their new Stag Size Eyeball survey, if it's pronounced correctly, which they've received good interest for. Is this something that you would consider also acquiring seismic in such a way, or do you wait for like the second generation of wide azimuth or whatever comes around?
Well, you know, we've been using I guess I would call it next generation wide azimuth techniques already. You know, we acquired the Patriot survey last year and have gotten great response on that. Patriot is what we call an orthogonal wide azimuth survey, where we've acquired two wide azimuth surveys 90 degrees from each other, and which essentially gives us almost full azimuth. You know, I haven't any experience with Eyeball, so I can't really comment on that. I would just say that, you know, geophysical companies continue to look for ways that we can enhance the image, you know, further than from conventional wide azimuth data. And a lot of that also, Christopher, depends upon the geology in the particular area. And I would say that, you know, the Gulf of Mexico is not homogenous. It's there are areas that are much more complex than other areas, and so you use different technologies or different geophysical techniques in one area that you wouldn't consider using in another area. So I think what you'll see as geophysical companies attempt to acquire sort of your next phase, you're going to see probably some variable, you know, variation of techniques dependent upon the geology as well.
Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. As we have no further questions, I would like to hand back to our speaker for any additional or closing remarks.
Thanks, Deirdre. Well, I appreciate your questions, and thank you for joining us on the conference call. We're looking forward to reporting again our Q3 numbers that we'll report in late October. Very happy with the way the year is developing for us, and look forward to reporting further on. Thank you very much.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.